Hey everyone, and welcome back to another video from Aman Talks NRL Supercoach. In today's video, we're going to be going through the front row forward position analysis. Hope you all enjoy it. If you do, do please give it a thumbs up. Do please consider subscribing to the channel if you haven't already. I've got a brand new Instagram account as well, which you can follow through a link in the description below. Do follow me on Twitter if you don't already follow me there as well. But without further ado, let's get into the big boy front row forward position analysis. So as we always do with these position breakdowns, just want to go through and look back at the last 3 to 4 seasons in terms of how has this position stacked up in terms of the high upside, top 20 averaging players, does that generally feature? Front row forward, if you're an experienced player, you probably historically think is a low upside position. If you're a newer player, maybe last year was your first year, you probably would have thought a little bit differently because we actually had 3 front row forwards in Tino Fasumula'awi, Payne Haas, and Adam Fanua Blake, all featuring the top 20 averaging players. Whereas in the last 3 seasons before that, we only actually had 1. Isaiah Papali'i was the person in 2022 and 2021. And in that case, he was actually playing in the back row for the Parramatta Eels. He wasn't actually a true front row forward. And in 2020, the only front row forward to feature in that top 20 was Tevita Pangai Jr. So historically, it is a kind of a lower upside position in that it generally is more of a consistent kind of 60 to maybe 70 averaging position, not one that's going to get you those big 90, 100 plus point scores. Last year probably was a little bit of an anomaly. We had 3 players in that top 20. So I think, is it potentially a transition in the game of potentially some of these players, or was it a bit of an outlier? I probably do think it was maybe somewhat of an outlier, and I think we are probably going to revert back to maybe having 1 or 2 front row forwards in the top 20. Someone like an Adam Fanua Blake, you probably wouldn't have seen in many teams, and that's because he scored a lot of tries last season. Tino Fasumula'awi also did score a fair few amount of tries as well, and he had a big step up in his average last season. Payne Haas seems to be the most popular gun front row forward, and that's probably for good reason, which we'll get into. But I would like to think that this, again, isn't a position that you target in terms of high upside, but could be for consistency. One of the big questions and big dilemmas I always face myself with the front row forward position is, do you like want to minimize your trades there because it's a low upside position and, you know, want to start with a gun guy like a Payne Haas or a Tino Fasumula'awi, just so you know you've locked in that guy who is going to be very consistent for you and over a good sample size will probably average around that 70 mark, or maybe even more? Or do you want to cheap out at the beginning, try to find the value with some kind of 400 or 500K mid-ranges because the upside isn't there and you're not going to get hurt by it, try to guess for the right one and then move to upgrade to these higher priced gun players in a, you know, maybe 4 to 6 rounds? That's definitely a dilemma that I have. We will most likely touch on that topic as we go through all the various different positions. I don't really know quite what my head is at the moment. I'm kind of, I think, slightly leaning towards not going with the gun really expensive front row forward, but instead going for a couple of guys who may be a little bit cheaper, who I think can do a job for me, and then try to get my way back up to the guns. But I can definitely see the validity in saying, look, it's not high upside. I'm just going to spend that money at the start of the year and not have to worry about burning trades while I burn trades in other positions to try to target more higher upside, like, you know, giving myself spare trades to kind of trade around my fullbacks, for example. That's something I think is a worthwhile strategy. So let me know in the comments below what you guys are thinking in terms of your front row forward squad makeup in terms of how much you want to spend. I think it's really a big dilemma that we're all going to be facing as we build our round one teams. So taking a bit of a deeper look at the top 4 guns who I consider for the front row forward position, Tino Fasumula'awi, Payne Haas, Adam Fanua Blake, and I've got Joe Tarpany in there as well. Despite having a fair drop off in average compared to those other 3, we don't want to forget, I think, 2022 and how good of a season Tarpany had. So I wanted to put him in here, and he also was the 4th highest averaging front row forward. So obviously clear gap between the top 3 front row forward and the rest of them, I guess, in a Tarpany. So Tino Fasumula'awi is the most expensive front row forward, 791K, currently owned by 19% of the game. I don't think he's going to be super popular. You know, he probably won't get any higher than maybe 20-25%. A lot of that is probably due to the fact that he has a bye in round 2. He does have a good set of matchups around it. Now, for front row forward, the matchups probably don't matter so much because, you know, generally their points get scored in base stats, you know, tackle breaks and offloads and things like that. That can happen against anyone. Doesn't necessarily have to be against weaker opposition. The only reason I mention it with Tino is that he is someone who has that tendency to score a few more tries compared to maybe some other front row forwards. And you can see, taking a look at the split of their average from last season, how they score their points, Tino surprisingly averaged the most in pure base stats compared to those other 3 front row forward. A lot of that is due to his minutes. He played 62 minutes on average last season, which was more than any of these other three. But that was something that did surprise me. I associate Tino more with getting those kind of bigger attacking stats, which he did get. You can see his scoring average of 6 per game last season. That kind of suggests that he would score a try probably one every 3 games, which for a front row forward is a really, really good strike rate. But I guess it's a question of sustainability. He also had 7 games over 90 last season, so he definitely has some level of upside, and that obviously gets linked back to the fact that he can score those tries. Him and kind of Adfinil Blake, I look at very similarly in terms of how they scored their points. Adfinil Blake had an average of 7 points from scoring last season. He scored a lot of tries, a lot of line breaks associated with that as well, which is why the evasive numbers were pretty good as well at about 15 a game last season, and he had 6 games over 90. And he's currently only owned by 9%. So there's something kind of telling here in that the two guys who probably scored the more tries last season, more attacking stats than Payne Haas, they're lower owned currently than Payne Haas, who's 37.5% owned at the time of recording and 750k price. I kind of agree with these ownership stats, and a lot of it is due to the fact that those other two scored so many extra tries compared to Payne Haas. Payne Haas only scored 1 try last season. Compare that to Tino, who scored 6, and also to Adfinil Blake, who scored 7. So I think people are probably thinking, look, there's going to be some regression in terms of the number of attacking stats that someone like a Fanul Blake or a Tino are probably going to get, especially at the beginning of the season. It's a bit more unpredictable, and also Tino has got that bye in round 2. And with someone like a Fanul Blake, you know, draw is not the best, so you can maybe make an argument that the attacking stats are probably not quite going to be there. What I like, and probably what a lot of people like about Payne Haas, is the work rate. You know, if you watch NRL for more than probably 10 minutes and you've seen a game from the Broncos, you look at this guy thinking, how is this guy still making all these tackles, still taking all of these hit-ups, and it's the 75th minute. He's just an absolute machine. And I think the general kind of optics around Haas is that he's an ever-improving player. You couple that with a really good work rate, you know, he has the best base power PPM of these other front row forwards of 1.18. He still had 4 games over 90 last season, only scoring the 1 try, so he has that ability to kind of still crack that 90 barrier even without getting major attacking stats. A lot of that is due to his offloading and the tackle breaking. We saw that improve last season. He averaged the best in terms of evasive stats out of all of these 4 with 17 a game, compared to 15 for Tino, 15 for AFB, and then 8 for Joe Tarpany. So if you kind of think there's going to be a general uptick in this player who's already got a really good work rate that doesn't look likely to be reducing. One thing with Payton Haas as well, that beginning of the season usually does feel like a good time to own him, and that's a time when he's not having to worry about playing Origin and managing minutes. He's kind of fresh and firing from the beginning of the season, and then you know that you can lock in pretty much a minimum of about a 70 average, I would say, up until the set of Origin period. One thing with the Broncos as well is that they don't have a bye until round 13. So you know that if you've got Haas, you can kind of lock and load him for your first half of the season. And I think there is a lot of value in that, despite him being very expensive at 750k. So despite everything I said at the beginning around, I'm kind of leaning towards maybe paying a little bit less. Haas is still someone I'm definitely thinking of having in my starting team, because I just know that, barring any injury, he's probably likely going to be scoring well. No buys until round 13. Very consistent. Another stat I've got to the right of me is the CV, which is the coefficient of variance. Basically, the lower the number, the better. It means they're more consistent. So Payne Haas at 17% is definitely better than these other three as well. So he just fits the mold of an improving player, really consistent, really good work rate. I quite like that the Broncos have got tough games to begin the season. You know, Roosters, Rabbitohs, Penrith, Cowboys, Melbourne in the first 5. Especially at the beginning of the season when scoring doesn't feel quite as high, you know, teams are still kind of working out, you know, shapes and routines and all that kind of thing. There's probably going to be more games played through the middle, a bit more grindy. That is the kind of game that would suit someone like a front row forward like Payne Haas. So, you know, the first 5 weeks feels like if the Broncos are just going to get into the arm wrestle and get into the grind, Payne Haas feels like someone who I think is going to profit massively from that. So whilst I'm not comfortable paying a lot of money in front row forward, I would be for Payne Haas, and probably not for these other three. Just to quickly mention Joe Tarpany, so he obviously had a big regression from 2022, only averaging 64.3. At 650k, it just feels like a bit of an awkward price tag. I don't really see much value in that, especially with someone like Ricky Stewart, who kind of meddles around with minutes. You know, you can see Joe Tarpany only averaged 51 minutes, and he was at his best in 2022 when he was kind of averaging 56, because that's when his PPM never really seemed to change, but he could still average that extra kind of 4 to 5 points and get him into that 70 barrier. Just don't quite see that happening, at the beginning of the season. And there's quite a few cheaper guys than him who may be able to score, maybe not 64, but maybe closer to around the mid 50, pushing 60. And they're probably going to offer you more value at the start of the season. So my opinion is probably not going to be starting, I think, with someone like Tarpany or AFB, just for the fact that I just don't think that level of try scoring is sustainable. I know that's part of his game, but if I'm going to pay 740k for a front row forward, especially at the beginning of the season when money is the tightest, just pay the 10k more, in my opinion. Get the guy who is going to be more likely more consistent, and that is Payne Haas. Tino, you're paying an extra 40k, and that's still a fair whack of money when you do think about it. Plus, he has that buy in round two, and I'm just looking at the first kind of six, even the first 12 weeks, that extra game that Payne Haas will play is probably going to be worth it, I guess, starting with Payne Haas over Tino, even if you think Tino's got that slightly higher attacking upside. Just very quickly, taking a little bit further look at over the last two seasons, how do each of these four front row forwards compare in terms of their pre-origin, during origin, and post-origin runs? Someone like Tino, he just seems to be better throughout the end of the season. So if you look at last year, he had a pre-origin average of 71, a during origin average of 97. That's because he went on a spell of, I think, three or four games in a row where he just kept scoring tries. And then at the end of the season post-origin run, he averaged 80 points. So generally there was an uptick towards the middle and latter half of the season. You saw the same thing in 2022. He had a season average of 67. The first period pre-origin averaged 59. Then it went up to 71 during origin and then 82 post-origin. So Tino, again, he feels like someone to me who builds into the season. So I'm kind of happy to not start with him beginning of the year. Payne Haas is a little bit different. He feels like the best time to target him is the beginning of the season. So you look at last season, he had a season average of 73.5, rounded to 74 here. Pre-origin, average of 76. During origin, 75. And then post-origin of 68. He did have some niggling injuries post-origin as well, which is another reason why that average did go down a little bit. But you look at him as like, if he's fresh and firing, a 74, 75 average is probably realistic. And if you look at 2022, he had a season average of 63, which was injury affected. But when he was out an injury, he averaged 68, during origin 47, and then post-origin of 56. So there was obviously a decline because of those injuries. But again, he was tracking pretty well at the beginning of the season. So again, it kind of feeds into that narrative in my head that the best time to target Payne Haas is going to be at the beginning of the season. So I think if you want to start with him, by all means, I think lock him into the team. He's not a bad selection, and that's why he's 38% owned. Taking a quick look at AFB, he started quite well last season with an average of 72, during origin of 63, but it was really the back end of the season, 81, when the Warriors were flying. He was really getting involved in a lot of tries and a lot of attacking stats, and he had a season-ending average of 81. And if you look at 2022, similar thing here. I mean, 2022 wasn't a great season for him anyway. He only had a season average of 52, but his best portion of the season average was also at the end of the season. So again, slight narrative that I'm building is that maybe the best time to target AFB is middle of the season and then towards maybe the latter half during that origin period when, you know, he won't be playing State of Origin likely, and so he's a good candidate to fill in your front row forward at that point. Joe Tarpany, 2022 and the 2023 numbers do have quite a wide variance between them, but you can see during the origin period last season was Tarpany at his best, averaging 74. A lot of that was due to more minutes availability because Corey Horsburgh played State of Origin last season, and in the year prior to that, 2022, that was just when I think the Raiders also had a few other injuries, and Tarpany was just playing really, really big minutes, and he just killed it, averaging 85. Very painful because I didn't own him during that period of time. But just rounding all of this out, it does look to me that Haas is the best person to have if you're going to spend up big at front row forward, because he's probably going to be the most likely to do well at the beginning of the season. No buys as well until round 13. All of that summed up makes me think, yeah, the more I talk about it, yeah, the more I probably will want someone like Payne Haas. So getting into some of the mid-range options, I've got this split into mid-range 1 and mid-range 2. Mid-range 1 is kind of in the round the 500k mark. Mid-range 2 is kind of ones in the 400k range. So there was a question from Twitter that I used for this video, which is what are the best sub 550k front row forward options? So we'll get into all of that. Just to quickly explain what is going on the screen here, because there is a lot happening here. I've got the player, their price, average minutes from last season, their season average. I've got that coefficient of variance as well, just to be able to get a bit of a sense check as to maybe who are the more consistent of these options. I've got their base power PPM, ownership, and then a few other extra things. So of course, you know me, love my numbers. What I did was I looked at each of these players and I said, during last season when they played more minutes than their season average, what was their average at that point? And what was that potential gain? And also, was there any difference in the PPM? Because I think that's something that is also worth looking at. Sometimes, you know, players in the middle, if they're getting more minutes, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to retain the same PPM. Generally, it's more likely to drop off. Overall, this price category does feel a little bit awkward, but, you know, some down the bottom of this list are probably going to be a little bit more popular. So the ones I've started with who are a bit more of the pod, I'd say, are Jack DeBellin, Junior Paolo, Mo Fodawaka from the Titans, and then Taniela Paseka from the Manly Sea Eagles. So all of these guys average between 57 to 54, and they've all got fairly low ownership. Taniela Paseka actually stood out to me in the sense that he had a pretty good base power PPM during his 48 minutes average that he had last season, with 1.11 base power PPM. He did also have a couple of injury affected games last season. When I took those numbers out, his season average then increased to 57.5. So there was already a 3-point improvement when he was playing non-injury affected games. When I looked at the games where he played more than his season average of 48 minutes, his average then moved up to 49.4. So that was an extra 5 points in average. There was a big drop off in the PPM though. It went down by 0.08. So he does feel like a player who, look, if there's some extra minutes, he probably is going to give you maybe 3 to 5 points of value. But when you're spending 556K, you know, for that player, especially at the start of the season, it's not like it's a cheap amount of money. And I guess the upside also just doesn't quite feel there with him as well. He feels like he's going to be a plodder, I guess, is probably the best way to describe him, unfortunately. I'm sorry, Taniela Paseka, if you're ever watching this video. I'm sure you're a good footy player, though. But the PPM is good, base power PPM. But I also just don't know how much change-up there is in that Manly forward pack. So the other part of this when we're looking at these mid-range options is what's the expectation of more minutes for these players? With Paseka, looking at that Manly team, that's fairly unchanged in the front row forward. Just don't really see where those extra minutes may come from. I feel like his role is pretty stable. So he probably doesn't feel like someone to me who's going to offer a tremendous amount of value. It's probably going to be maybe an extra 3 points if he has a completely un-injury affected run of games. Then maybe his average goes up by about 3 points. But again, that's probably not getting you a lot of cash that you'd want at the beginning of the season. Strangely enough, someone like a Junior Paolo did stand out to me when I did pull these numbers as well. So he had a season average of 54 minutes from last season, a decent base power PPM of 0.94. In the games that he did play more than 54 minutes last season, his average actually went up quite a bit to 63.6. So that was an extra 7 points in average. Again, a similar thing with Paseka though. PPM did drop, and also Eels forward pack feels very stable to me as well. Like, you can kind of say that the front row forward is going to be him, Regan Campbell-Gillard, Will McGred coming off the bench, Joe Ofoangawi as well. You're going to have Jermaine Hopgood in there. You're going to have Ryan Madison potentially part of that middle rotation as well. And then you might have Bryce Cartwright, Sean Lane as the back row. Doesn't really feel like a front row forward that's really changed that much. So the expectation of extra minutes, just not quite sure if that's going to be there. Now, I have seen some preseason photos of him looking pretty fit and pretty lean, but look, last year Sean Johnson looked pretty lean and none of us started with him, or at least I didn't, and he ended up killing it. Just don't quite know if Junior Paolo is going to follow the same trend, but you know, he did look good in those pictures. I just don't know whether those extra minutes are going to be there, but it does seem like a thing where, you know, maybe potentially if there's other injuries in that Eels front row forward and maybe he's going to be relied upon, there does seem to be a good uptick in his minutes at that point in time. So maybe one to consider in your black book for maybe down the track. If you do think there's going to be some extra minutes on offer, he could be someone who is maybe worth thinking about. Similar narrative, I'd probably say with someone like a Jack DeBellin. He does have dual status. He actually played quite a lot of minutes for the Dragons last year at 68, and that gave him a 57-point average. In the games where he played over 70 minutes last season, his average did bump up quite a bit, and it got to 65.9, so there was an 8.8 gain in average. Again, I'm going to have a similar narrative. They've brought Harm Saleh to the Dragons as well, so there's probably slightly less middle minutes on offer there as well. I don't see his role really changing that much. So again, he feels like kind of he's someone who's going to be at value. 57 average is probably what you're going to get out of him. And he just probably isn't someone who does have that upside that, you know, if he does end up playing over 70 minutes. Sure, you're getting 8 points of value. That is quite good. But like, he's not going to kill you, I think, if he kind of does start playing bigger minutes and does very well. So again, someone for me who at that awkward price tag of 582K, I'm probably not really considering. Similar thing also with Mo Fodawaka. He actually averaged 60 minutes last season, which when I pulled the numbers, I was actually quite surprised that I didn't actually realize he'd played so many minutes last season each game, but there it is. So again, Kin Palacio has been brought into the Gold Coast Titans. Fodawaka is definitely probably the front row forward number two at that team, you know, after Tino. So role-wise, don't really see it changing too much. If anything, maybe the minutes go slightly down now that they've got Palacio. They still have Jamin Jolliffe as well. And when he was playing extra minutes, average went to 60.9. So a 5.5 gain in average, which is not bad. But again, expectation of minutes increasing. I just don't know if they're quite there. You'll notice a certain theme that I'm getting at here with those front four. But if you look at someone like Max King and Ruben Cotter, my narrative is probably going to be a little bit different when we start talking about minutes. Now, if you watch my preseason team reveal, I do own currently Ruben Cotter in my front row forward, and he's very, very popular. 26% owned, I believe, is the second or I think he's the second most owned front row forward behind Payne Haas. So 26% ownership, he is going to be highly owned at the beginning of the season. A lot of this is pedigree. Now, he's a state of origin player for Queensland. He's actually had some good historical averages as well for Supercoach. In 2022, towards the beginning of the season, he had a really good run pre-origin where he was averaging 64.5 over the first 10 weeks before he actually had a major injury. And that did hamper his 22 average, which eventually went down to 59. Also looking at 2023, in his pre-origin run, he was actually averaging 60.5 minutes, not 61, and he actually had an average of 60.5 as well. So if you look at him now when he's priced at an average of 53.2, he's recently been named the co-captain, I believe, of the Cowboys. Average of 54 minutes from last season, he does feel like someone who has potentially got that ability to increase in minutes. Now, I don't want to be hypocritical because I've said all that stuff about those other four front row forwards, but then Ruben Cotter is coached by Todd Payton, who loves to mess around with his forwards minutes. I don't know, I've got more of a gut feeling about Cotter, as in, like, he's such a quality player. We know he can play big minutes. He's played 80 minutes at State of Origin in his bloody debut. I know that as a New South Wales fan, I really didn't like the fact that he was so good for them. But he can play those big minutes, and generally his PPM doesn't really go down that much. He's just got that work rate. When I looked at his numbers from last season, when he did play more than 54 minutes, his average did go to 61.5, which was an 8-point gain in average, and he also actually gained in PPM up by 0.02. So it doesn't seem like a guy who's going to drop off his work rate, and if he just gets the extra minutes, he's just going to keep pumping out those tackles and runs and stuff. So someone who's priced at 53, who historically has shown the ability pre-origin to actually average 60 or over, he feels like someone who I've got a little bit more confidence in, who can actually get that value of 7 to 8 points, when a lot of these other guys, it really doesn't feel like the role is going to change materially for them. Whereas with Cotter, I feel like he's just an ever-improving player. He's been recently named co-captain. I'm going to buy into the narrative, I think, a little bit more on this one. Probably a lot of people have as well, hence why he's 26% owned. But, you know, to answer the question of the best sub 550k front row forward option, for me, he's probably number one, I guess, in that list. Another guy I don't mind in this category is Max King from the Bulldogs, quite lower owned at only 4%. He has a pretty good base power PPM of 1.03, so that is better than Ruben Cotter. Last season, he just was kind of playing through a lot of different injuries. I think he had like an eye at one point, an AC joint. He had all a bunch of stuff going on, but he just kept playing through it for the Bulldogs because they were really light on middles. Now, the Bulldogs have recruited a lot in the offseason, but even again, the middles situation doesn't really feel that different. Like, Max King does stand out still as their number one front row forward guy. So he still feels like someone who the average of 52 minutes, I don't really see that changing. If anything, is probably maybe going to slightly go up as he maybe builds up a little bit and hopefully has more of an injury-free run. In games last season where he played more than the 52 minutes, he had a season average of 58.5, which was a 5-point gain in average. He did lose some PPM though, so he went down by 0.06. So it does feel like someone who, if he's going to play those bigger minutes, he probably will drop a little bit in PPM. So I do see some value in Max King. You know, if you're thinking that he's going to be at least playing, maybe call it 55 minutes hypothetically, he probably is going to be someone who will get you maybe that extra 5 points of value. And I like what I like about him as well, that he's fairly consistent. So I didn't really touch on the coefficient of variance for those other front row forwards, but of this list here, he does have the best at 21%. That's actually better than the likes of, say, AFB or Tino. Like, it's fairly close to Payne Haas, who's at 17%. So he's going to be more of that consistent guy for you as well. So if that's something that you want, you don't really want to mess around with trades in your front row forward. He's not going to be playing Origin probably. So you can kind of have him as a steady Eddie during the beginning of the season. And if you don't want to spend up big in Payne Haas, I'm not saying he's similar to Payne Haas, but he's similar in the consistency element of it. He's probably just going to be averaging more around 55 to 58 compared to the 70 to 75 that Payne Haas can get. But you are saving yourself $200,000. So you do need to factor that into your thinking. If you're kind of umming and ahhing between Cotter and Max King, I do prefer Cotter slightly. He has got the dual status as well. And I just feel like there's more upside to him as a player as well. He's probably got that ability to get attacking stats more than someone like Max King. Max King I look at as a very steady Eddie, good for maybe the 55 to 58 points. And if that's what you're after, I think he's still a fairly decent option. So the next set of mid-rangers that I wanted to discuss are players more in around the 400k price tag, which I do think is a fairly interesting set of players. Got another question from Twitter, which was, if you're choosing four guys solely based on cash generation, who are they? They're more likely going to be the guys who are in this kind of 400k price range, because at the moment there's not really a whole heap of cheapies, although we will discuss a couple of cheapies in the next little section. But the front reports I've got here, Tom Flegler, Jai Arrow, Tamalolo, Tavita Totola, Terrell May, and Harm Saleh. They're kind of the few 400k priced front row forwards I wanted to talk a little bit more about. First guy I actually want to talk about is Terrell May, because when I looked at the base plus power PPM numbers, they just completely stood out for me when I looked at him with a base plus power PPM of 1.22. which is insane when you look at the rest of these guys in comparison. The next best on this list is Harm Saleh at 1.05. Now, mainly played a bench role for the Roosters, but towards the end of the season, he really had kind of an interesting set of numbers in terms of his minutes. They just really were starting to increase towards the back end of last season. In the two finals games for the Roosters last year, he played 56 and 54 minutes, even coming from the bench. And then just looking at some of his minutes from like round 22 onwards, 56, 39, 40, and 51. So he was starting to play some bigger minute games towards the back end of the season. Now, my recollection has failed me. I can't remember if there was any injury or something, so do let me know in the comments below if there was something like that. The struggle with I have with him is that, look, the price tag is really good, 430k. The numbers seem to be good, 1.22 base power PPM. Anytime he played more than the 33 minutes, his average went up to 61. That's like a 19-point gain in average, and the PPM went up as well, which went up to 0.17. I do believe there is an attacking stat in that that is also inflating it a little bit, but even then, I looked at the numbers if you take away that try, and his PPM still went up. So he just seemed to be playing a huge role, like more work rate and as well playing bigger minutes. The only fear I have with him is that the Roosters forward pack is just absolutely stacked, and I just don't know if those extra minutes are going to be that way towards the beginning of the year. They have got Spencer Lenu coming into the club as well. There's just a lot of guys who can play in the middle. You've got Egan Butcher, Nat Butcher can play some middle, Angus Crichton can play some middle. You still have Lindsay Collins, you still have Jared Weir Hargraves, you've got Spencer Lenu coming into the club, you've got Terrell May. There's just a lot of minutes that need to go around. So to me, he seems like someone who, based on numbers, like if there's a front row forward that goes down in the preseason for the Roosters, Terrell May's probably going straight into my team because he has showed that ability to play big minutes. And even then, his PPM just didn't really drop off. So I'm looking at him as though someone who, I could be wrong, he could start the season on fire. And I guess at that point, I'll say, well, look, he's 430k. He's probably worth still jumping on. And it's probably going to be easy enough to downgrade to him or even upgrade to him if you needed to do that, if he does start the season playing those bigger minutes. So he's probably not someone I think I'm going to start with just to take the punt on. But he does stand out really based on the numbers. And especially when I looked at the numbers playing more minutes. So I am keen on him. But I'm just not sure if I'll be starting with him because I'm just uncertain on what the minutes are going to look like for him with that big Roosters pack. Tom Flegler, who I've got at the top of the list, he's 19% owned, so he is the most popular of these kind of mid-range front and forward options. Averaged 44 minutes last season at the Broncos with an average of 46.6. Anytime he played more than those 44 minutes, his average went up to 54.5. So that was a 7.9 gain in average. Now, he did score a couple of tries towards the end of the season, which probably are inflating the numbers just a little bit. What I did, though, was I just looked at his scores if you took away those tries, playing those bigger minutes, and his average still went up by 5.7 points. So there's still 6 points of value if he just played more on average than those 44 minutes. Now, the Dolphins still do have some decent middles. They've got Tom Gilbert, Jesse Bromwich, Jared Wallace, in addition to Tom Flegler. But Flegler feels like a bit of a marquee signing for them in that they're probably looking at him as hopefully the number one front row forward for them. Wayne Bennett, I don't know what he's going to do with his middle forwards at the Dolphins, but Flegler, at least with him, he's 475k, so he's more expensive than any of these other guys. He does have that buy in round two, which isn't ideal, but hopefully you've got a round two or round three, can't quite remember, but hopefully you've got one decent backup in your front row forward that could step in for him in that week that he does have the bye. One thing I liked was that his PPM didn't really drop off in those times when he played more minutes. So if he does seem to be playing more minutes, you know, going from 46 average to maybe like mid 50s, that's a decent amount of value in him, you know, maybe between 6 to 8 points. So there is hopefully going to be some cash generation there. And I think the average of 44 minutes going up, I think my guess is that that would likely happen because he's stepping away from the Broncos, which had Pat Carrigan, Payne Haas, you know, a couple of others really big playing minute middle guys. Maybe that's not quite the case at the Dolphins. So I'm leaning towards starting with Flegler, especially when I'm kind of 50-50 about maybe him or like a Terrell May. At least he's more expensive and I can always do the downgrade if I need to. So I don't think Flegler is a slam dunk. You know, 19% ownership does show that he is a little bit more favored than some of these other guys, but I don't quite mind him. I think there is definitely some value in that he would likely average more if he gets those extra minutes and the PPM isn't going to really be changing. A few people on Twitter have mentioned to me that they're keen on Jai Arrow. Now, he's coming in at 466K, averaged 50 minutes last season. Apparently, he's going to move into maybe somewhat of a hybrid role at the Rabbitohs this season, where he plays some edge and some middle. And we've seen that in times past, and he has done well, generally has averaged above 55 in those instances. And if that was the case, you're looking at some serious value. Even last season, when he was playing more than 50 minutes, his average went up to 54.7, so 9 points of value. PPM did drop off massively. That's probably evident of, you know, moving to the edge, where, you know, you're not going to be doing as much work rate as if you are playing in the middle. So with Arrow, if we do think he's going to play that role, I don't mind him as well. You know, 9 points of value, I wouldn't expect the world from him. You know, he generally he seems to be someone who, in the Supercoach community, there's a lot of, not hype, I would say, but like there's a lot of favoritism to him, with the hope that he would become something who he probably fails to deliver on the expectations of someone we hope and think would get to a 60 average, probably resolves back to like a mid-50s. But if you're paying 466 for him when he's priced at 46, look, you're getting some value there. So I also don't mind Jai Arrow as well. Again, when I'm kind of 50-50, I'm probably looking at maybe I just start with the guy in Flegler, who I'm happy to take a punt on, in the hope I get it right and that he's more expensive. If I need to make a downgrade, I can do that. Tamalolo obviously has been absolutely killed by Tom Payton in the last few seasons in terms of minutes. He only averaged 49 minutes last season. Just a really low base power PPM as well, 0.88. He's just not the same kind of tackle busting, line breaking, destroying Tamalolo that we saw in the past, which is a shame. There was value in him when he played more minutes last season. He gained 7.4 points in value up to 50.4, and the PPM didn't really change either. It actually went up to 0.05. My main thing though with Tamalolo is just that I just don't have faith in Todd Payton giving him the minutes. Cotter, I feel differently because Cotter's been named co-captain and he's a younger guy who I think can handle those bigger minutes. Tamalolo, they've got him on a long contract. I think they're more likely just going to be trying to manage his minutes, to be honest. So I feel very differently about the two, even though they're playing under the same coach and both in the forwards. It's also looking at Tamalolo's scores of last season. There was only two games last season where Tamalolo scored over 60. Apart from that, he didn't have any other scores over 50. So I feel like those instances of him playing those extra minutes were fairly limited. There was 8 games in total that comprised that period where he did play the extra minutes. And so his average did go up in that little brief spell, but those included his 2 scores over 60, one of which did include some kind of bigger evasive stats, which probably likely was a line break. And the other score over 60 was actually had 59 points in base. So there is some potential that if he does get the minutes, he actually could do better. If you've got a bit of a gut feeling on Tamalolo, you know, 7% owned, look, at the price tag, he's probably going to offer you value at average of 43, but I don't know, I just feel like I would want to see it first from Todd Payton in terms of the minutes he's going to give him before I'd be happy to jump on. Tavita Totola, chat a little bit about him as well. He's actually been kind of one who I think has been more highly spoken about in the kind of the online community, not so much on Supercoach, only 2% owned. He had a bit of an injury affected last season, only averaged 44 minutes for an average of 42.7. He did have an injury-affected game in round 1. If you take that one out, his season average actually increased already to 46. So there's already a couple, about, you know, 3 to 4 points of value. And if you also look at the games where he played more than the 44 minutes, his average went up to 50.9. So you're getting a little bit slight extra value out of him compared to someone like Tamalolo. His gain and average went up quite a bit to 8.2. With Harm Seller moving on to the St. George Dragons, you do think that potentially there is some extra minutes on offer for Totola. I feel like he's going to be more likely to get the 45 to 50 point average, which would offer some value. Probably just not a heap to make a bunch of cash, but he would be someone who still gets you some cash generation and maybe is a good steady idea as well until you want to upgrade your front row forward in the future. I'm probably not likely going to be starting with him. I probably would lean maybe towards like a Flegler, even though he has got that buy early in the season. I just feel like maybe there's potentially some more upside to Flegler as well. But Totola does look like a good safe option. Harm Seller, I don't mind either as well. Moving to the Dragons, 425K. Only had an average of 39 minutes last season, was injury affected as well. If you look at his games where he wasn't actually injured or not injury affected games, his average already went up to 44. If you look at the times where he played more than 39 minutes last season, his average actually went up to 48.7. So there was about 7 points on value there, which again, you think if he's moving to the Dragons, it'll look, you know, they're probably not the biggest in terms of middles at the Dragons. They've got Blake Laurie, they've got Jack DeBellin and the Molo brothers, I believe. But Ham Saleh coming into the team, you know, maybe he still gets around the 40 to 43 minutes for the Dragons, which, look, if he does, he's going to offer some value as well. I feel like this is the word buzzword of the video is value, value, value. But that's what we're looking for, I guess, when we're looking at mid-range front row forward options. Only 3% owned as well, so he does feel similar to Totola. So a lot of these guys are all very similarly priced. Because I've still got my kind of some reservations about all of them, I'm kind of looking at it as start with the guy who's most expensive, which is Flegler. Terrell May probably is my favorite just due to the numbers, and he feels like someone who's got some serious upside to him as well. I'll hopefully get some better idea of that in the trials. If I see some good minutes out of Terrell May, look, I can very easily go to Terrell May as my kind of second front row forward option. Otherwise, I think I'm going to spend up a little bit extra, get Flegler. But if you've really got a gut feeling between, you know, Saleh, Totola, and May, if I had to rank them, May would probably be number one. If I had to rank all four of these guys, I'd say, assuming kind of all equal in terms of their minutes and things, in terms of they don't really change massively from last year, I would probably rank it as Flegler, Arrow, Terrell May, and then probably Totola would be how I'd rank it. Saleh would be fifth, and then Tamalolo would probably be sixth. That's probably how I'd rank these mid-range front row forward options. Finally, taking a look at some more cheaper options kind of below that 370k range. Number one, I've got Keenan Palacia, who I am liking as an option to sit on my bench as maybe my third front row forward. The reason I like him is, look, if I start with someone like a Flegler, I'm going to need to fill a gap in that bye week. And so he can also maybe help me minimize trades in my front row forward to begin the season. I like Palacia. He averaged 41 minutes last year for the Broncos for an average of 35.8. He doesn't quite have the best PPM of some of these other guys at 0.89 base power, but I do think the potential for extra minutes will be there. Last season for the Broncos, when he averaged more than 41 minutes, he actually averaged 45.4, so there was an extra 9.7 points of average there. The PPM did go down, so he does feel like a guy who, if he's going to play the bigger minutes, the PPM will reduce. But I'm looking at the Titans as, you know, they've got Tino, they've got Fotowaker. And then after that, it's kind of like a bit of an even race. You know, you've got Jamin Joloff, you've got Palacia, a few other guys who probably, I can't remember their names. He does feel like someone who could potentially demand some good minutes. Now, again, remains to be seen how Des Hasler wants to rotate his middle forwards. He does have a history of ruining them as well. I didn't even mention this about Tino, but Des Hasler moving to the Titans, you know, he has turned some of his hardworking locks before into ball players. He's done that to Jake Trbojevic. Probably another small reason why I'm probably not looking to start with Tino. But Palacia, I don't mind at 365k. Probably feels the most reliable out of these other options in terms of likelihood of playing bigger minutes. He's had 7 games last season where he played over 50 minutes. So there is a history where he can get those bigger minutes. And so I hope that he can get that at the Gold Coast Titans. So again, similar thinking, start with a guy if I can ideally can, start with a guy who's a little bit more expensive that I can use to downgrade to some of the other guys if I get it wrong at the beginning of the year. Seen a lot of people starting with someone like Liam Knight or Spencer Lenu, 21% owned for Lenu, 8% owned for Liam Knight. Now, Lenu did have a bump up in his average when he played more minutes than the 32 he averaged last season, went up to 40.3, which is almost an 8-point gain in value. But I spoke about it before with Terrell May. There are a lot of middles at the Roosters, and I feel like Lenu has been signed to retain his role as that kind of impact front row forward off the bench. I don't really see him as being someone who they've brought in to play those big minutes. They've got plenty of guys to play minutes. They need that impact off the bench, especially when they're signed to have like a Jared Weir Hargraves, who's kind of, you know, getting older and older. So I feel like with Lenu, minutes-wise, I don't really see it changing too much. So I kind of look at him as like, I don't really see if you're going to get much more value out of that 32.6 average. So I'm actually fading Spencer Lenu at this point in time, but could be proven wrong. He could all of a sudden kill it for the Roosters, as he was for the Panthers. I just don't see a massive change in his role though. So I'm probably looking at not starting with Spencer Lenu. Similar thing with Liam Knight as well. He's 8% owned, 332k, moving to the Bulldogs. He did have some games last season playing more than the 32 minutes. Average did go up to 40.6. One of these games, though, did include a try. So just to try to be kind of equal, I took that try out just to see what the average would go down to. It went down to 34. So there's only, again, if you look at excluding attacking stats, when he played more minutes, he only actually had a 2-point gain in average. So didn't really seem like he moved the dial that much when he played those extra minutes. So again, uncertainty about the Bulldogs and their rotation. They've just got a lot of new forwards in there. I expect Josh Curran to be playing at lock for them. Raymond Faitala-Mariner has moved on as well, so there could be some more minutes on offer for Liam Knight. But just when it's an unknown, again, probably looking to fade, I think, for me, at least for the beginning of the season. A guy who was very popular, but that's slowly starting to reduce, is Fletcher Baker. 311k, only 9% owned. I just saw an article today that suggested that Corey Jensen is likely going to be the other starting front row forward alongside Payne Haas, now that Flegler has moved to the Dolphins. So I think a lot of people were hoping that Fletcher Baker, coming from the Roosters, was going to fill that role. That doesn't seem the case. It seems like he's probably going to be a bench option for them. And so I think a lot of people probably then turned off at, look, well, his season average last season was 29. Is that going to change much? Unknown at this stage. When he was playing extra minutes last season, he did go up to 39. But again, there were some attacking stats in there. Took those out, and the average went down to 31. So similar to Liam Knight, only a 2-point gain in average. So didn't really consider Fletcher Baker for myself, especially thinking his role and minutes probably isn't going to change much coming from the bench for the Broncos. Davey Mualii, who was a very popular cheapie at the beginning of last season, still comes in at 268k, which is a fairly cheap amount. Now again, if the minutes are there, if he gets some extra minutes above the 27 that he got last season, his average went up to 37, so that's an 8.7 gain in average. There was one game last season where Mualii, I'm just having a look at it now, he did play 53 minutes and he actually scored 54 points, of which 52 was in base. So there is a suggestion that when he does get the opportunity to play big minutes, the PPM doesn't really go down. His PPM still stayed at around that 1.0 mark, but that only happened once last season. He only had four other games where he played more than his average of 27 minutes. In that time, he averaged 33. So look, there is still obviously some value in him playing more than that 27 minutes, but again, it's the regularity of that. We just don't know. And I think a lot of people struggle with Mualii last season where, you know, he was a cheap guy at around 260k, just wasn't quite making a lot of money that you could really then upgrade him. And I just feel like similar would happen again this season where, you know, look, even if he gets 5 points of value, maybe he gets up to like 310, 320k, but even from that mark, it's still very hard to move up and upgrade. So I kind of look at Mualii as, again, someone I'm probably going to avoid, I think, for the beginning of this season. Xavier Willison, fairly highly owned at 9% as well for the Broncos, likely to be coming off the bench. He showed some good numbers in that he only averaged 19 minutes last season, but in that time, really good PPM of 1.18. So he seems like someone who, if he gets the extra minutes, he could also be an option. I've seen him in a little bit more teams than probably Fletcher Baker. He's more cheaper as well at 265k. I'm currently not starting with him because my squad structure is Sam Hughes, who's 24% owned. To touch on him, Phil Gould talking him up in the preseason, saying he'd been training their house down, likely to get a bench spot, and at 238k, which is close to bottom dollar, seems fairly obvious choice, barring anything else we see in the trials. So I've got Sam Hughes as my fourth front row forward, but ideally I want my third guy to be someone who I'm happy to play in any given week, someone like a Keenan Palacio, who can more likely get me closer to the 40 to maybe hopefully 45 points, rather than someone like a Mualii or maybe a Xavier Willison, who's more likely to get me that low 30s mark. I'm kind of looking at it that way and building my squad structure with front row forward, hence why I'm not really considering at the moment someone like Mualii or Xavier Willison, nor Liam Henry from the Penrith Panthers, who had a couple of games for them last season, or actually I think he only had one game for them last season, scored 29 points in his one game of 23 minutes. A lot more light will come on these cheapies during the trials and preseason, so I won't spend as much time talking about them, but Sam Hughes seems to be really the obvious guy, I think, at this point in the preseason. All right, guys, that is my front row forward analysis player deep dive. Hopefully you all enjoyed that. The video is probably going to be slightly on the longer side, but there was a lot to get into, so hopefully you do enjoy it. Next up will be the second row forward, which has got a lot of stuff to talk about. I'm honestly thinking about doing second row forward over two videos, doing the guns and then maybe the mid-rangers in another one. So let me know in the comments below if you do enjoy this video. Give it a thumbs up if you liked it, and I'll see you all in the next one.